This is AdTechGod, and I command you to listen to this commercial message. I'd like to introduce you to Publica by IAS, the award-winning CTV ad server trusted by some of the biggest streaming services and smart TV manufacturers globally. Publica helps a growing number of leading AVOD and FAST services to power their programmatic ad break decisioning via products including a unified auction, server-side ad insertion, and a demand-agnostic ad server built from the ground up around streaming. Head to getpublica.com to find out how they help CTV publishers to grow their advertising revenues and provide streaming audiences with linear-like TV ad break experiences. Again, go to getpublica.com. Welcome to the Ad Tech God Pod, your window into the world of advertising technology and the people behind it. I'm your host, Ad Tech God. Welcome back to another episode of the Ad Tech God Pod, where I interview some of the top minds in the industry. I'm your host, Ad Tech God. Today's guest is none other than Mike Fisher, the Executive Director of Investment Innovation at Group M. Mike Fisher is a name synonymous with innovation and forward thinking in the advertising industry. At Group M, one of the world's leading media investment companies, Mike plays a pivotal role in steering the future of media. His expertise lies in identifying cutting-edge technologies and practices that can redefine how brands engage with their audiences, ensuring that Group M stays at the forefront of the industry. With a career spanning several years, Mike has been instrumental in developing and implementing strategies that leverage data analytics, programmatic buying, and emerging digital platforms to deliver exceptional results for clients. His work is not just about optimizing media spend, it's about creating meaningful connections between brands and consumers, driving innovation in a way that marries creativity with efficiency. Under his leadership, Group M has embarked on numerous initiatives aimed to enhancing the value and impact of media investments, whether it's through exploring new advertising formats, embracing AI and machine learning for better targeting and personalization, or championing transparency and sustainability in our industry. Mike's influence is evident in the progressive direction Group M has taken. Mike, welcome to the Ad Tech God Pod.
I am so happy to be here talking to you today about this. Longtime listener, first time caller, if you could say that in a podcast environment. And I've been waiting for this ever since you announced your first slate of guests. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for being here. This is what happens when, you know, Eric Franchi and Ari Paparo say, hey, you want to be on the podcast, God? And I go, oh, sure. And then that's how this sparked up. So when I joined their podcast initially, I had no intention of doing it and found it fun and kind of entertaining. So figured I'd do it myself.
And podcasting is a great medium right now. I mean, my focus obviously is on video and streaming and all things sight, sound, and motion. But podcasting, what a time to be in it. So I'm super excited.
It's definitely growing. I'm seeing everybody doing them. I just think it's a great way to spend time, whether driving or train or bus, you know, to learn something new. So thanks for being here. So most of my guests are working deeply in ad tech. I'm primarily focused on ad tech. You come from obviously one of the largest agencies in the world, but how did you get into the industry? How did you get into ad tech? I know you've spent some time at MediaMath in the past. How did your career start?
Yeah, so I'm an interesting one. I'm someone who's always been around ad tech and went agency side, but starting out, I mean, I've been in the TV space as long as I've been working. When I graduated from college in 2005, I started working at Fox in the traffic and planning team, and I thought it was the coolest job in the world. I would go in the morning, I would determine what order commercials would run in a linear traditional TV environment. I would print out those orders, I would fax them off to a tape house, make sure the tape got to the station distribution center, and that night I would go home and I would have my printout in front of me and I would be watching, you know, a show on Fox, and this was the syndication team. So I was watching The Simpsons in syndication or King of the Hill in syndication. And I knew what commercials were coming up next because that morning I had sat down and determined that. And it was really cool because it was like my first job and it was a way to really see results. And, you know, I would brag to my friends like, oh, you should watch tonight. I think I did something really cool with the order the commercials are airing in. And after about a year of that, you know, I realized that that wasn't really what I wanted to do. My passion was going to be working in minor league baseball. So I decided to go to grad school. I was going to, you know, have this amazing career. I wanted to be a baseball GM. And my first semester of grad school, our professor asked us to write a paper, final exam paper, around something that we needed to do to transform our industry. And I had no ideas what to do. So I wrote a paper about why I think different households should see different commercials. And this was in 2007. And basically, I came up with this idea. I was like, this is brilliant. This is going to redefine the industry. And I realized that I did not do my research. And I had come up with the idea of addressable TV advertising, which has been something that people had been talking about and doing for a really long time. But it was a very well-researched paper, and I've gone back and reread it, you know, 15 years later now, and it actually still somehow holds up, which makes me feel better about it. So I did an internship with a minor league baseball team, and I did not like that, and I knew it wasn't for me. But that really sparked my, maybe I should go back into the media world, but on the more advanced media side. And when I graduated, I got a job at Canoe Ventures, which was the joint venture of the six largest cable companies, which was chartered with doing addressable advertising. And it was really that perfect jumping off point to get into that targeted TV advertising, redefining what the space looks like. After about 2 years there, unfortunately, like some joint ventures, it was shuttered. I went over to Brightline, which is still the leader in interactive dynamic living room ad formats. I was there during a great time where we transitioned the business away from legacy dynamic ad channels that ran inside of cable networks to true streaming. We were the first people to run interactive streaming ads in the living room. You know, our goals were to deliver 50,000 impressions a month of streaming ads in the living room. And looking back on that, how much the landscape has changed with the migration towards streaming has been spectacular. After that, I went to MediaMath to work for Joe. I spent 3 years at MediaMath, where I led the TV and video business on the DSP side, really redefining the role of MediaMath in the TV buying process, redefining what our video ad products look like, and growing the business there. And then I got a call from Adam Gerber. He and I had actually gotten into a couple of different arguments on panels at various events over the years when I was at MediaMath. And he would say to me after, I don't agree with one word you're saying, but I think you are somebody who I need to work with. And after a couple of years, I finally said yes to Adam, and I said yes to agency life. And that was 4 years ago. And there hasn't been one day where I've regretted moving from ad tech to agency. I think that there's always been a stigma about agencies, which I can guarantee you is not true. And I'm enjoying myself every day.
So you bring up a good point. There is a stigma around working at an agency. And I think, you know, it varies obviously from role to role, manager or department. I mean, you could work at an agency and have 50 departments that are fantastic and one that's not. And I think people often, you know, dwell on the negative and not on the positive of things. So if somebody had a bad experience 12 years ago, they're going to repeat it 400 times, but they don't necessarily talk about all the good times they had as often. They just like to complain. How has that shift been from really ad tech into agency? How is your role, I guess, different today working directly at the agency?
So it's actually not that different. You know, I have a very unique role at Group M, really being that ad tech expert in-house, helping clients understand the value of using technology to buy and measure media in a more accurate way, working with our teams and our clients to cut through the clutter. There are a lot of ad tech companies out there that are doing unique things. It's our job as a client's agency to cut through that and really digest for the clients, what do they need to know? Who do they need to be working with? What is the value that this ad tech company or this way of buying or this way of measuring is going to have on my client's bottom line? And that's not something that we get an opportunity to do very often on the ad tech side. Normally, sitting in the middle, you're providing a service. You're either selling into an agency or you're selling into a brand directly, or in ad tech, you could be selling into the publisher, but you don't have that level of visibility to really understand the value creation component of it that we have on the agency side. And that's really the most exciting thing, which is to not just run impressions and to use new technologies to deliver impressions, but to really understand the impact that that type of buying, that type of planning, that type of measurement is having on our clients' outcomes, and commercialize that and operationalize that for clients in a way that impacts their bottom line.
So do you generally evaluate various solutions in market, see how they could benefit your clients, make those suggestions, and then have them move forward or not move forward? Or how does it work?
I mean, it varies. A lot of the work that my team is doing now is internal alignment. How do we continue to use media, data, and tech tools across the ecosystem to further facilitate the shift towards data-driven video, inclusive of linear, legacy addressable, set-top box addressable, and streaming, which is the fastest growing medium across the industry. And I think the thing that excites us, most of us in the industry the most, where the opportunity lies. There's a lot of internal alignment that needs to get done as well, changing the mindset of having discrete budgets to a data-driven video budget, looking at new ways to measure this that move beyond just looking at panels or just looking at impressions. We have a once-in-a-generation opportunity now to redefine what measurement looks like in the living room space. It's not just saying, let's do what worked in linear and apply it to streaming, or let's just do what worked in digital and apply it to streaming. We should be coming up with new models across planning, buying, and measurement to create more accountable impressions that align with what the clients are looking to get out of those impressions.
I really just loved that entire sentence you just said. That's really good to hear. I love your enthusiasm and honestly your overall love for being able to provide the right solution. And I think you're absolutely right. This is really a once in a generation opportunity to carve out what TV looks like for the future. I think you learn a lot from the past, but you learn a lot more looking forward and knowing what those challenges were from your past, from, you know, traditional linear television, and how we're going to adapt and enhance what we're providing to clients in the future. I love that you guys are doing that at Group M. So you've been there for a little over 4 years. You jumped over to the agency side 4 years ago. What have been some of the biggest highlights or milestones in your career, you know, working in ad tech?
Yeah, I mean, I can go back and name milestones and highlights of my career at all of the jobs that I've had. At Brightline, as I said, it was launching, you transitioning and launching the first interactive ads formats in the living room. At MediaMath, it was really transforming, which was a predominantly display business, to really have everybody there understand the value of premium video in the living room and bringing clients and networks and media sellers together to start to transform what programmatic TV could look like. At Group M, I think the biggest highlight so far for me has been the work we've done around what we call continuous play, which was work we did with iSpot over the last 2 years to really start to look at the impact that occurs from a technology challenge. When somebody is watching TV on a device plugged into their TV, like an Apple TV, a Roku, an Amazon Fire TV, one of those third-party add-ons that makes a TV smart, those TVs don't do a good job of communicating with the devices when they've been turned off. So my boss at the time was watching a show, fell asleep watching TV, turned off the TV using his TV remote, turned on the TV the next afternoon and realized that content was still playing. And he called me and he's like, "We have a big problem." I was like, we're fine. We don't have a problem. Just a fluke, but I'll test it anyway. And I went to one of my devices in my office, turned it on, started streaming something, turned off the TV, came back 48 hours later, and it was still playing content and still playing ads. In fact, when I turned the TV back on, it was in the middle of a Group M client ad. And I called my boss back and I was like, "Oh, you just made a lot of work for me over the next 2 months." Little did I know that 2 months would turn into years of this. We partnered with iSpot, which created a brand new way for them to utilize ACR data, automated content recognition data, built into the TV to match up timestamps on ad delivery logs with detection on the glass level ACR to determine a percentage of ads that were delivered when the TV was turned off. Now, this is not fraud. This is a technology challenge that is one of those nuances that come from a landscape that is more measurable and more targetable. This is something that we've faced in traditional TV for years. In 2010, we called them zombie boxes. It was when those cable boxes, when people would turn off a TV, but the cable box owned by the cable operator didn't turn off. The difference is that panel-based measurement in the linear TV space accounts for that. Impression-based measurement in the streaming space doesn't account for that. So we put a lot of work in identifying that, but also identifying fixes that could be implemented by the devices and publishers. Increased awareness of device state being passed to the app. Prompts that would prompt users to ask, are you still watching? And over the last year, the occurrence of continuous play has been reduced by over 50% and now falls with close to what we consider an acceptable threshold. And that's just from being able to measure that. And that is, to me, one of the coolest things I've done in my career and one of the coolest things that an agency has done in the last few years to look more like ad tech. And that's one of the most exciting things about it is having agencies work more like tech partners.
I mean, the sheer fact that I think the range that I recall, and this happened, I think, a while ago, was what, 8 to 10% of ads served were on a device with the TV off. Doesn't sound like a lot, but I guess in when you're talking about billions of potential impressions available every month, it is a big number and a substantial number. So I'm happy you guys have taken the initiative with iSpot to implement a solution for it. And I do know those prompts. I've seen those prompts. And honestly, it kind of makes me happy in a really weird, nerdy ad tech way.
It also makes you happy as a viewer, because as a viewer, it's a bad experience to lose your place in a piece of content you're watching.
Right. Absolutely. Where do you see, as obviously the industry continues to shift and we're not necessarily as impacted by the, you know, cookie apocalypse, but where do you see the industry moving over the next 6 to 12 months specific to what you work on or in the connected TV streaming world?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the good things about streaming TV and TV in particular is that we've never had access to cookies. There's never been cookies in a connected TV space. So this is not something that we need to light ourselves on fire to try to solve quickly. We know how to operate in a cookie-less environment. We know how to operate in a one-to-many or one-to-few environment. We're never getting as granular as to target specific people because we'll never know the specific people sitting in front of the TV screen. It's not as intimate of a impression as a computer, phone, tablet is. These are household level impressions that are being delivered to the right household with the right message. And the work that we're doing is to be more audience focused. That's not to mean we're moving solely away from demos. Demos are a part of it, but think about it more from a demo plus perspective when possible, making sure that the units and the ads that we're buying are more likely to be reaching the right people who are going to be taking that desired outcome that the client has in mind. And there's all sorts of ways to do that. There is, you know, household level data that we can use. That's, you know, the obvious one. But there are some things that are both at the same time super obvious, but not so obvious. You know, one of the things that we're starting to look more at is time of day. And that really aligns with attention in the TV space. If a client is looking to drive an action, an outcome that requires more thought than simply going to a website, we need to know the time of day that a viewer is going to be the most apt to take that action. Is delivering an ad at 1 a.m. when somebody is falling asleep in their bed have the same impact on an outcome as delivering one in prime time or delivering one in the morning when people are more focused on TV content? Those are the challenges that the industry is going to look to solve in the next year, year and a half.
So that feedback's actually really interesting because I work in the space. I don't think I've ever thought about that. I don't think it's something that we often think about. I think we understand we serve impressions, we measure those impressions, we validate those impressions, and we, you know, pay for it. But I think the one thing that I have not thought about was really time of day targeting. I think that's something that's probably more common with, you know, day parting in mobile or day parting in web, but we don't necessarily think about that much in the television or connected TV space. What do you see as the potential opportunity for the industry to adapt that as a more common practice and strategy moving forward? And are the right capabilities and tools in place to do that today?
Yeah, I don't think we have the right capabilities and tools in place to do that today in a currency grade way. I think one of the things that the industry has started to realize over the last year, year and a half is that while all currency is measurement, not all measurement is currency, nor should it be. And it's up to us to determine what type of measurement is ready to be transacted on and why is that ready to be transacted on, and help clients understand that even if they're not transacting on some sort of measurement like attention, like co-viewing, like TV on-off state, these are measurement capabilities that should be appended to everything that we're buying, because having that secondary and tertiary measurement to ride alongside transactional currency unlocks new strategies for our clients, unlocks new ways of buying, unlocks new ways of understanding impact, outcome, value of audiences.
So you mentioned, and we're going a little off agenda, so let me know if that's okay. But you know, you talk about measurement being one piece and currency being another. Do you see us moving more towards a single currency and market the way we used to do things? Or do you see us having multiple currencies that clients use?
I think that is a question that is going to be sussed out over the next couple of years. I think that it depends on how you're buying and what you're buying. Standard age, gender demos is very different than buying and reconciling against advanced audience segments and guaranteeing against advanced audience segments. So those are the things that we are testing for our clients now, understanding where are the pain points around that, what are clients looking to get out of it, and really aligning the impression delivery and the measurement of impression delivery with the client's outcome so that it fits into the tools that clients are looking to measure success. You know, one of the things that we're very cognizant of is that C-suite executives at our clients don't want to see five sets of reporting to understand how their ads are doing. They want to see one consolidated report that breaks out, here's all the places their ads ran, and here's one metric to measure success against. So I think that while we are very bullish on the idea of alternative measurement and currencies, there needs to be a way to reconcile them into one easy to understand, this is what the campaign has done, this is how it delivered.
There's obviously a lot of change in the industry. We've been changing and adapting and moving more towards enhanced and improved targeting and capabilities across, you know, the streaming space. How do you specifically stay up to date? It's a constant change. I'm constantly reading, as you've probably noticed. I'm also constantly sharing what I read, which is how I pick the posts that I do post. How do you keep up to date on emerging technology and solutions and market?
First and foremost, we are in a relationship business. This is a small industry. Everybody knows everybody except you. I do not know who you are. We've talked about this. I like to keep it that way. Apparently, we almost had an interaction at CES, according to you. But my hope is one day we'll have that end of Dark Knight Rises moment. We'll be sitting there at a restaurant. I'll look at you. You'll look at me. We'll nod. That'll be it. I'll tell you that it's all about who you know and the relationship with who you know. We all talk a lot. We love to hear each other talk because we're always learning from each other. And that's why these events like CES, like Cannes, like Beat, like Possible are really so important to attend, because learning from your peers, both, you know, on the publisher side and the ad tech side and other agencies, is critical for all of us.
I agree with you on that. I mean, I think a majority of what I learn outside of reading the news and understanding what technology is being coming out or what industry trends are there generally, right? Like kind of like as a very high 35,000 foot view of what the industry is moving towards. A lot of my learning really comes from the people I know. And yes, we did cross paths at CES. We were in a casino, not gambling, but we were standing there and I looked at you and you looked at me and I know I recognized you, and I don't think it clicked. It
didn't click.
So when I noticed it didn't click, I just kind of turned around and walked away. And I usually do that and I sort of chuckle because I'm seeing so many people I interact with, whether it's normal day to day that have no idea, or people that I just see on occasion. And it's a ton of fun kind of being this secret ninja walking around.
I think that's great for the industry to have you kind of be that guy who, in a positive way, highlights all the great work we're doing with no agenda. You're not trying to sell us on something. You're not trying to get us to do anything. You're simply highlighting all the great work that we're doing as an industry in that positive way that makes us all feel better about the work we're doing. You know, my wife is a nurse practitioner. She saves lives. I put ads on the TV. Very different, but it's nice to have recognition about all the good work that we're doing in the industry from you.
You know this, we've exchanged messages multiple times. It's really because I was tired of the negativity across the board. I think we got into this bad place where there was a lot of complaining. And when you step back and you take a look at the progress we've made just in the last 3 or 4 years, we don't even have to go back 7 or 8, but let's just say in the last 3 years, the progress we've made, the innovation we've come up with, the improvements we've done across the space in general has been nothing short of incredible. But I think we find the negative topic, we find the challenge, and we sort of spin it up to be this big, massive problem. But we all know it's a problem and we're all working on it. It's just a matter of time for us to solve it. So I love being a supporter of the industry, just like the industry supports me and supports my family. Mike, you've given us some great insights into the next, 6 to 12 months as an industry as a whole. But what are you most excited about with Group M?
So we launched the Ad Innovation Accelerator around CES. And the idea is to really start to put more structure to how we approach innovation, starting with the living room. 30-second ads and 15s and 60s are interoperable. Every media seller across streaming will take that ad unit. What's really exciting is the future of interactivity, dynamic creative, personalization, some level of grab your remote and do this, click here to learn more, drive viewers deeper into experiences. This is not something necessarily that's new, but this is something that doesn't necessarily fit neatly into any bucket on a client's plan. And the idea of the Ad Innovation Accelerator is to bring together media sellers, technology partners to really create commonality of standards, either standard acceptance of these interactive dynamic ad formats that run across multiple sellers and or standards for what does a pause ad look like? What does a dynamic piece of creative ad look like? So that build once, run anywhere becomes a reality. Also taking into account the work that the networks have done to build their own proprietary solutions, but how do we make it fit more neatly into a client's media plan so that this doesn't become something that gets tacked on to a buy, but really fits into the strategy that our planning, buying, and measurement teams are thinking about. So we were really excited to announce with the first round of partners. Clients have been very receptive to the program. We're going to be adding additional partners as well down the line. But really, our goal is to create standardization when it comes to these dynamic ad formats in the living room and make sure that innovation is truly scaled and truly scaled in an interoperable way.
And Mike, just for my understanding and the listeners' understanding, is this all interactive type of ads that are programmatically available?
So right now, we're not really limiting how distribution is happening in this space. The majority of these historically have been direct sold as part of IOs. So we definitely want to make sure that programmatic is on the roadmap for this. But to start, it's simply about making sure that we're able to have these common standards.
So this brings us to the end of the podcast. You've been an incredible guest. I appreciate all of your support over the last few years. I know that you've been very supportive of me. So I wanted to thank you.
Thank you. This was a pleasure to join you. I'm sure, as I said, one day I'll find out who you are. But until then, keep it anonymous, keep doing what you're doing, and keep growing this because it's such a great way for everybody to talk, such a good way for everybody to converse. And again, the positivity aspect of it is really what lands.
That's all I want. And Mike, if I ever tell you who I am, I won't say anything, but I will slip you a sticker.
That would be
and then dream. I won't say anything. And then the look on your face will be caught on video or something because it's going to be awesome.
I look forward to that day.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I appreciate you and I appreciate Group M for having you here You've been an amazing guest, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Ad Tech God Pod, a podcast for the people about the people that make ad tech great. Stay connected with me for more insights, trends, and interviews in the realm of ad tech. Don't miss out on our latest updates, so follow me on X, Instagram, and connect with me on LinkedIn. Don't forget, ATG Slack community has insights, networking opportunities, and jobs. Keep the conversation going and stay at the forefront of ad tech innovation.